Hello and welcome to another episode of No Plans to Merge. I'm your host, Caleb Porzio.
I'm your other host, Daniel Colborn.
And today's episode is brought to you by Honey Badger and...
And Rogue Amoeba.
Thank you to our sponsors for sponsoring the show. Back to the show, starting the show. Decol.
Welcome to the show.
I am dead inside this morning.
That's a shame.
I am working on a really hard Dom diffing algorithm issue problem.
That would kill anyone inside.
And now we're recording this podcast, and I came on to this little call with my friend Decol here and was like, Decol, I don't want to talk about anything. I need something interesting to talk about. And we're both kind of feeling this way. Like, we need, like, what's something we could talk about that will is really engaging?
Because we're both having, both of our lives right now are technology problems that most people are not dealing with.
And if you are, they're like, I don't know.
They're insanely boring and pedantic. And
yeah, they're not fun to talk about. So Decol. I think we should talk about how much money we make.
I think we should also talk about how much money we make. So here's the question. Do we start with how much money we make now, or do we tell the story of our programming careers and account for all the dollars we've made from the beginning?
We should start with exact... We should answer the question in like one sentence and then backfill. Like then do all the story. But we should start with like, I don't know. Like a number or a sentence, like, Decol, how much money do you make?
I think I make $98,000 a year, plus or minus $1,000, plus or minus bonuses, plus or minus any random contract work I might do.
Nice.
So right around six figures flat.
Sweet. That's cool.
How much money do you make, Mr. who knows how much money you make?
I don't have a salary number. I made like 90 something when I quit Titan, or like 89 or something like that. Around 90, I think. I think. I'd have to think about that. I kind of forget. Maybe 82? 85? Let's say 85.
That's impossible. That's impossible.
That's impossible?
Yeah, right? Because with those percentage raises, you should have gotten way up above that, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's say...
I don't know.
80. Let's say 88 is what I made when I left Titan.
Right.
And then I went to zero.
Right, $0.
Bounced along that bottom floor for 9 months. So I can tell you my monthly... I'll tell you how much money is in the bank, is in my freelancing bank account. $17,000, and I don't think I've taken much out of it, maybe like a couple grand. So that's pretty much all the money I've made like this year.
There you go.
Pretty freaking low. But yeah. I'm actually gonna do like a real freelancing contract. That can't be right, because I've done a lot more. I don't know, I make like $3,000 a month by default. Like, these are the recurring engagements I have. But
does that include podcasts?
No, which would
be
an extra
podcast of mine either. 400
a month. So yeah, let's say 3,400 a month is what I make for as my baseline by default. With
assuming that these sponsors keep giving us money,
right? And so what I make on top of that, sorry, I'm going to answer this succinctly. Freelancing work on top of that, I'm actually like about to take an actual freelancing gig, like a real one where you actually program.
What are your rates going to be?
150. That's just my rate. I don't know. I'm not.
What kind of hours are you going to be working for them?
Low. Less than half time.
Cool.
But that should bag me an extra like between $3,000-$5,000 a month.
Yeah.
Depending on how that goes. So. Anyway,
paying the bills.
Yep, paying the bills. That's how much I make.
Cool. I think the more interesting story is how much did you make, and what has the progression of your making money been?
Agreed.
Because I've a bunch of people are trying to become programmers. I don't know if you've heard about this phenomenon. And like my buddy Ian is one of them, and he's like learning all the things right now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you know, everyone always wants to know, like, oh, how much do I need to know to have a job,
right,
or whatever.
Yep.
But, like, the real question they want to know is, like, to have one of those programmer salaries I've heard about, how much do I need to know?
Yeah.
How much do I need to do? How much experience do I need? Blah, 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 blah. So I think our experiences are different enough, but it'd be an interesting story to tell. So what was your first programming money that you acquired?
It was writing websites, static websites in HTML and CSS on my own, just finding like friends and family. And mm-hmm. the first site I made was for a horse club, like a horseback riding club. And I built it, I designed it, I met with them, multiple meetings, whole thing, built the site and charged them $200. So that was that. But so
go.
It was basically like pittance, like freelance work while I was learning programming in high school and college. I'll say the first job. So I was working, building like a web store at a company. Like I got hired to just like manage a web store and I ended up working on like the code of it. So I was actually like shipping stuff out all day and like sorting inventory in a warehouse. And that ended up turning into me being like, hey, I can program and I can build you guys this system for another part of the company. I did a bunch of design work and whatever. So I got a flat rate of like $18 an hour. And by the end of it, I was full-time Laravel programming, like working on a Laravel app full-time. This was Laravel 4.0.
Hype.
$18 an hour. I felt like the shiz. Then I hopped over to my first full-time job, which the starting salary was $60,000. So that's my first chunk. What's your first chunk?
My first chunk. So yeah, my first like money at all was, yes, my friend's parents needed a WordPress site made and I made it for them. And I think I got $100 or 10,000 yen technically.
Nice.
And it was like in an envelope. They're like, it was, you know, they did the classic thing where, like, they didn't agree to pay me any amount. They just kind of, like, were like, my parents kind of volunteered me to make their website.
Oh.
So I started doing it, and then the $100 was like a thank you gift.
Yeah.
But, you know, hourly, I think I made, like, $2 an hour on that. but anyway, so I did that. I did a bunch of that type of stuff. When I got out of college, my buddy started a video production company in Chattanooga, Fancy Rhino. And I know
your friend. I met him at the wedding.
No, not these. You might know some of
different video,
you might know
guy.
His brother. Different.
This guy owned like a video thing and is like a video editor and stuff.
Oh, I know who you're thinking of. But no, not that guy.
Okay.
I know a lot of video people, turns out.
Guess so.
So anyway, I made their first website, and that I charged them. I tried to charge them like $700, and I thought I was like reaching. You know,
mm-hmm.
I was like, "Ooh, $700," but like that's rent plus, you know. And they basically were like, they gave me a literal actual blank check and said $700 is not enough money.
Mm.
Write down the real amount on this check. We know we're your friends. And I literally had no idea what to do. And so I was like, well, $700, that was based on like $20 an hour or whatever, you know? So then I ended up bumping it to like $40 an hour, which seemed insane at the time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I took home like $1,500 or something.
Yeah, that's a big win.
Yeah. And huge. I ended up going and working for that guy's dad in Baltimore, who owned a video production company that was trying to turn into a full service agency. And they wanted to start a web department, and their whole thing was, we need to find a guy who like really likes web stuff but doesn't have a web job and therefore doesn't expect web money,
mm-hmm.
so that we can experiment with the idea of whether or not we can have a web department at this marketing company. And along comes Daniel, working in restaurants, selling selling calamari. And they're like, ooh, you're poor. We'll give you, you know, more money than you're making now. And it was great. So that job, I think I started at 30.
Okay.
Which I was making 12 an hour in the restaurant. So it worked out. I started at 30K, and then I did a bunch of like stuff that I'm not super proud of, like going and getting, I mean, stuff I kind of recommend and kind of don't recommend, like going and getting other offers and then like threatening to quit unless I got a raise and doing this whole thing. So I rapidly escalated my salary there. So I went from 30 to 45 within a couple months. And then there was an offer that came in that was at 60. So then I floated that to the other place. They offered to bring me up to 60. Then I floated that to the other guy. And then he brought it up to 75. And then I left for 75. So it was like this whole kind of playing both ends against the middle thing, which I don't feel great about the way I treated the people who sort of took a flyer on me, giving me my first job. Mm-hmm. I did it. And at this point, you know, it set the baseline for my salary that allowed me to build on that going forward.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was a little bit skeezy. I was strong-arming people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, I left that. That job, I got 75 through a series of I need a raise conversations, or and like, hey, I have the perfect person to bring in for this job, but if I'm going to do that, then, you know, I need to feel comfortable that I'm going to be here for a while and I need to be making more money. Those types of conversations. I went at that job from 75 to 84 over the course of a couple, maybe a year and a half or 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I came to Titan, I told them I made 84 and I wanted to make 92, and they gave me 88. So I took it.
That's even higher than you told me. At least I thought.
I think that's what I made.
Wow.
So yeah, I came into Titan making 88, I think. And then percentage raises, etc. I've never gotten the big percentage raise. I've always wondered what I would have to do, but I've never done it.
Yeah.
But anyway, I got all the little percentage raises, stacked them up, and then now I make what I make here.
Yep.
So yeah, that's programming money.
Solid. I'll fill in the gaps. I got that first full-time programming job. I started contracting for them for like $35 an hour, I think.
Yep.
And then insert, you know, 100 other freelance contracts from when I started to that point where I was charging $25 an hour and stupid stuff like that. So I was $35 an hour, which I thought was decent. And then they wanted to hire me full-time. My interview with them to actually start contracting was he handed me this like mock-up in Bootstrap and was like,
mm-hmm.
make a database with this stuff in the database and then make this page that spits it all out and whatever. I think it was just a screenshot. Yep. And so, I mean, I sat down and I just like, I knew CodeIgniter really well, better than I knew Laravel. And I just like got a CodeIgniter app running, little database, put some data on a thing, bootstrapped it out. And this was like something that they actually needed to do for their company. And I just like did it because, I mean, this is not me being like, I'm a genius savant. It's like these guys, just the standard of programming was pretty
they
low.
Didn't know what they, yeah.
So I built it like right there. And he's like, oh my gosh, you're hired.
Yeah.
Well, he actually took me out to a baseball game when he offered me like a real salary. Before then, it was just contracting. And it was 60 uh-huh. grand. And then at one point, they made me a senior developer, the senior developer, quote unquote, and I ended up making 70. And then when I moved to Titan, I still made 70 because I was an idiot and wanted to work at Titan so bad. I was just like, I just want to make what I make, and they're not going to like hand me free money. So I was making 70, and then I talked to you, and you're like, yeah, dude, I started at 85. And I'm like, you're joking. So I had a meeting with Dan and Matt. I made a spreadsheet, or I made a slide deck and everything. And
did you really make a slide deck?
Oh, yeah. Almost every review that we've had, I would have like this big presentation. It's like,
no way.
Yeah. They would laugh. They couldn't stop laughing because they're like, nobody does this. So I listed all the reasons I deserve 85, and they gave me 82.5, I think. And then it was a couple 3% up from there, and you know.
That's funny.
Yeah. So, yeah. And when I was leaving, I talked to Dan about freelancing. My goal when I was leaving was like, I'm going to do 2 months of sabbatical, and then I'm going to go hard into freelancing, which is funny because I'm still on sabbatical. It's 9 months later.
Yeah.
But
you're freelancing some.
Yeah, a tiny bit. I don't even feel right calling it that. Soon, maybe I'll be doing real freelancing work. But yeah. I basically decided, we talked about rates, and he's like, you could, you know, 135 would be like what I would think you would easily get jobs from. You could probably go up to 200, but that would be on the high end. And, you know, and I was basically like, I'm just going to settle on 150. Like, that's just going to be my number. And I'm not even going to think about it.
It's a nice round number.
Yeah, it's easy. It's a round number. And it's funny because it's always, you know, it's all relative. Like, now 150 to me is like average to low in my brain. I'm like, you know, and it's not low. But you think about an agency like Titan, and they charge more than that. And Rails agents, they charge a lot more than that. So I'm like, I'm a pretty good developer. Like, if you're hiring me for Laravel stuff, I'm really valuable. And if you're going to hire an agency anyway that gets people that are at least, or at, I'll say at most, my level of, like, I'm not saying that I'm, you know, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So now I'm just used to it. Like, you know, you raise the bar, people are willing to pay you that, then you get used to it. And so the next jump maybe would be like 200 or something. And I'll think, oh, that's a lot of money. And then at that point, and you just keep climbing that.
Yeah.
That ladder. But yeah, so that's that. That's how much we make. There's one other thing I wanted to touch on. Oh, really quick, like for other people, because you mentioned your friend. I get that question a lot. And there's a lot of people in my life who are looking to like make career switches, and a friend of mine, he wanted to make a career switch. He's a pastor, and he was making not much money and working a lot. Mm. And he's like, I don't want to do this anymore. And he met up with me at a coffee shop and said, what do you do? And I'm like, all right, well, I do video. At the time I had that video business. I'm like, I do wedding videography, I do graphic design, and I do programming. I like programming the most, and there's the most money in it. And he's like, all right, well, sold. Yeah. So he came over to my house once a week, and I taught him how to program for about a year. And he ended up getting a job using Salesforce, like a Salesforce job that he, you know, like he didn't even, I was teaching him like PHP and Laravel. Yeah. And he ended up in 1 year, I think, maybe in 1 year's time, maybe a little bit more, he went from zero to like $60,000 or $65,000 salary at a Salesforce agency.
Yeah.
Knowing almost nothing about Salesforce.
It's great. My ultimate success story. I think Salesforce is like that, though, man. Like, no one learns Salesforce ahead of time to go get a Salesforce job.
Right.
Like, when you hire someone for a Salesforce job, I feel like your assumption is like, no one wants to be doing this, but they're doing it for the money.
Yep.
So we have to build in 3 months of them learning and Salesforce.
They hire so many. His friend, he was a football coach, and he got a job like a year after. He was like, I don't want to be a football coach anymore because you don't, you know, you work insane hours. I have to live in crazy places and I make like no money. So he was a college football coach too. And he switched to programming in, I think, 1 year's time working at the same Salesforce agency, probably making 65 starting. And then they both got like raises pretty quick.
Dope. You know? My ultimate success story was my buddy Joe, who he was a photographer, did wedding photography, had like a pretty decent Instagram, like, but you know, at the end of the, and I think he worked in admissions at the college that we went to, you know, like that move where it's like, I'm going to graduate and then take a job at the school that I just graduated from. And like, he had a wife and kid, or maybe a wife and a kid on the way. And it was like, he was starting to like look at the world in that way where it was like, I got to make a move here.
Yeah.
Like, I got to up the earning capacity or whatever. And so he hit me up and was like, how do I be a programmer? Like, I got like, you know, a couple of months till this baby happens. Like, got to start making money. And I was like, well, JavaScript is huge. A lot of people hiring in JavaScript right now. So learn JavaScript. Do the West Boss stuff. Do the West Boss React courses. Mm-hmm. And then make a bunch of open source stuff on your GitHub in React. It doesn't need to be good. It just needs to be like a bunch of stuff. Good is better, obviously. and so that's what he did. And he learned React. And he learned that stuff fast. Like, really fast. Like, he just put in the hours. He was probably doing 4 hours a day or something, you know, mm-hmm. and was just sucking up JavaScript and React knowledge. And then, like, within a shockingly short amount of time, like 6 months or something from not knowing how to program, he got a job offer in New York for this React company. And they moved to New York for a couple of months. And I think he got an offer at 72 for his first, but it's New York money, so who knows right. what the fuck that really works out to. But he got an offer at 72, and he bounced it until he was able to get a programming job that was remote, and then he moved back to Chattanooga where everything's very cheap, and now he's in Chattanooga doing whatever he's doing. You know, but yeah, so my buddy Ian is taking, I feel like he's taking a different approach. I want him to learn Laravel. I think learning Laravel is the right move for him, because it just ties everything together, you know? Because, like, he's learned enough JavaScript to be dangerous now. He knows how to write code. He knows how to, like, concatenate strings and map arrays and do all kinds of other things, yeah. you know, and store variables and write loops. So he knows some code, and he knows some HTML and CSS. He gets that you, like, execute JavaScript on a web page. He learned CSS Grid because I told him to, and you disagree. You think you should learn Flexbox.
Yeah, I don't even know CSS Grid.
Well, maybe that's why you disagree. but anyway, he's like floating right around the edge of being able to be useful.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. He's like almost to the point where all of these skills could come together to be useful. The one thing he doesn't get is like, what, like, he's still writing HTML. He doesn't have anything in the back end generating his HTML.
Yeah.
Right? And so eventually in the life of any good programmer, you realize that most HTML is generated, not written. I mean, it's written in small chunks and then mm-hmm. assembled. Right?
Yeah.
But, and then you realize that you need to assemble HTML to accomplish your goals.
Yeah.
And then one of two things happens. Either you go down the dark CMS road,
yeah,
and you become like a WordPress or Drupal developer, even worse. And you just become like CMS guy, you know,
yeah.
And you learn all the intricacies. You can spend a career learning all the ups and downs and ins and outs of the CMS world
for sure.
And it's dark. Or the thing that I didn't do, which I wish someone had just grabbed me and been like, it's not that hard. You should just learn Laravel. It's not very hard. It's actually pretty okay. Like, it's easier than learning how to write plugins for WordPress. And that's what I'm trying to do right now.
Half of that was like Robot Daniel whisper in and out. You said Laravel's not that hard, and then what did you say?
It's not that hard. It's easier than making plugins for WordPress.
Oh.
It's easier than all the other nonsense that you're going to do trying to avoid learning Laravel.
Hmm.
And like, he's also kind of going down this road of like, oh, should I learn Mongo? Should I learn Node and Mongo and Express? And like, what's the right database mm-hmm. for me? And I'm like, you're asking, those are all interesting questions, but like, build something full stack, anything.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
And then you'll have a frame of reference for the questions that you're asking. Because if I answer the questions now, I don't know what you're going to hear in my answers.
Hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. Like, I might tell you, like, if you say, like, is Mongo a good database? I'm like, well, I mean, it's kind of less popular, it's pretty resource intensive, and it's weird. You know? So, like, does that mean it's not a good database? No, it's great for some people, for some things. It's very cool. But does that mean that, like, your goal here is to, like, make a career change? Do I think that the first thing that you should do is, like, learn front-end JavaScript, vanilla JS, and then learn Mongo? Probably not.
Right.
You know? Like, I don't think that's a path to success.
So what are you saying? So, you're saying that your advice to him is...
I think my advice right now is learn Laravel. Build a Dungeons & Dragons character creation app, because he was my dungeon master when we played Dungeons & Dragons.
Nice.
And he's real into D&D. So it's like, okay, build an app that lets you roll a new character in D&D, right? And there's so many fun little relationships and stuff that you'll get to create, and you'll learn how relationships and databases work, and there will be object-oriented PHP involved.
Yep.
And you'll get to learn about classes and all this stuff. And you'll get to learn Blade and how you generate templates, you know? And I think that's the missing piece that he doesn't know yet. And so when he says, like, he'll say things to me like, I just don't get why I would need a database.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
And I'm like,
yeah, those are good questions.
And it's
that's
like,
good that he knows to ask that.
Yeah. No, he's very smart. He's a smart fellow. You want to talk about sponsors?
Yeah, let's talk about some sponsors. Let's talk about Honey Badger
first.
Talk
about some sponsors. All right, let's do it.
Honey Badger, thank you so much, Honey Badger, for sponsoring the show. Mm. Honey Badger is an error monitoring platform.
It sure is.
If you don't have an error monitoring platform for your app, you need to walk right into your boss's office, open the door without knocking, and yell, we need to install Honey Badger. Put it on the sprint, put it on the backlog, talk about it in the backlog grooming, and
prioritize it.
Exactly. Write the user story, assign yourself and everybody else to this user story, and spike on it that we must install Honey Badger because
you should swarm.
You swarm. Exactly. Yep. Swarm on it, do some planning poker, and then go and install Honey Badger. And then to your chagrin, it will take you 1 minute to install it. And then you'll have,
which will be embarrassing because you will have judged it to be an 8-story point.
Exactly. So
issue.
To save face and to not devalue the points, you can just sit in your office and twiddle your thumbs until the sprint's over, and you come to the retro and you show them what you've done, and you get applause, and you shipped it on time, and everybody rewards you for your hard work. Your scrum master holds you up in a chair above his head. All thanks to Honey Badger. Honey Badger and Air Monitor. Now you go to Honey Badger and you link Honey Badger up with your Jira tickets so that when a new error occurs, a new ticket's created.
What?
So now, next time, instead of twiddling your thumbs, you can work on actual issues that users are experiencing in your app.
Wow.
I know. So Honey Badger is legit for an error monitoring solution. It'll let you know about all the errors that users encounter in your app, where they came from, what happened when the error encountered, all the stuff about them, their email address, their IDs. You can hook it up with a bunch of third-party apps like Jira, if you're using Jira. Sorry if you're using Jira, but if you are, you can use it. And it's a great company. It's like three really cool guys, and they're totally legit, and the customer support is killer, and their blog is cool. And it's a Rails app, so we have a lot in common with them. They're our friends over the fence in the Rails world. So Honey Badger is what's up, and it's really, 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 really friendly with Laravel. So go use it. And
sweet.
And that's that. Thank you, Honey Badger.
Awesome. Let's talk about our other sponsor, Rogue Amoeba. Rogue Amoeba. Rogue Amoeba. Caleb, you want to hear about Rogue Amoeba?
Please tell me about Rogue Amoeba.
Rogue Amoeba.
So far, you've been covering Rogue Amoeba apps, and both of them I didn't know anything about, and you got to tell me about them.
Yes.
But this one.
So that's what we're doing. This one you've heard of. So what Rogue Amoeba does is they make wonderful, high quality, like some of the best quality apps for the Mac. They also make a couple of Windows apps. This one, Audio Hijack, is probably their flagship app. If you've ever heard of a Rogue Amoeba app, it will be Audio Hijack. It's incredible. I don't know how to explain it other than it is incredible. So let me explain what Audio Hijack is. Audio Hijack allows you to do all sorts of things with sound on your Mac. So you can take any input device on your Mac or any output sound, like system audio. You can capture audio from a specific application. You can take inputs from all over your computer and then just pipe them through these chains that you create in Audio Hijack to do all sorts of things. Right now, as I speak to you, I am recording into Audio Hijack, and here's my chain. I have my input device, which is my microphone, going into something. My microphone weirdly only records in the left channel, which has annoyed Caleb for a long time.
Every episode.
I have a new channel, which takes my one-sided audio and splits it out into stereo so that Caleb doesn't have to worry about it. Then I have a little peak monitor so that when I talk, I'm not clipping. And I can be, you know, watching my volume as I'm speaking. Then that goes right into a recorder, which saves out to a 256 kilobit MP3.
Audio Hijack records?
Audio Hijack records. Huh. That's what I'm doing right now.
You don't use QuickTime?
No, I'm not using QuickTime. I'm using Audio Hijack.
Very nice.
Yeah, and in addition to that, any what do they call them? VST plugins?
Yep.
Any VST plugin can be an Audio Hijack module.
So you could use AutoTune in your...
I could use AutoTune in my chain. I have all of the...
That's awesome.
All, you can do ducking. So like if you want to like talk over a movie or something, like if you wanted to do like MS3T...
Dubbing?
MS... Ducking. So ducking is where like if I'm talking, it will lower the volume of the other thing.
Oh.
So we could watch a movie and it could be at full volume, but anytime I talk, it would lower the volume of the movie so that you would hear me over the movie.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So you can do that. You can do time shifting. I have the Isotope plugins that I have used in the past to like repair really damaged audio. You can just stick them in line if you want to. You could add distortion or anything. You can do insane stuff with Audio Hijack. Or you can do the really simple stuff, right? So that is what I'm doing. So I use Audio Hijack for all of my recordings. It's a beautiful app. It's very, like, it's just rock solid. Like, I have no question whether or not this recording is going to get saved. If my computer shuts down in the middle of this recording, I know it's not going anywhere. You know, it's just a good situation.
And everybody uses this, right? Like, most people who record stuff use Audio Hijack. Like,
yeah.
Most, like, power user type people, like... Adam, Matt, yeah. Those folks probably use Audio Hijack.
I don't know what Matt uses. I think Adam does. And if you have to do something crazy, like record someone's Skype audio and two microphones, you can set that up in Audio Hijack. Like any weird arrangement of sound sources, you can do it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So it's very cool.
So if like a hot new Backstreet Boys song comes out and it's only on YouTube... You could like pipe your browser sound as the input and then record it to an MP3 or something and then put it on like a burn it to an MP3 CD so you can put it in your MP3 CD player.
Assuming that that hot new Backstreet Boys was in the Creative Commons license, you could do that.
Oh, yeah.
Caleb? I mean,
for sure. Of course. Of course.
The Creative Commons share alike license. Copy left. Thank you to Rogue Amoeba for, number one, creating this wonderful piece of software that I would be using even if they didn't pay me to talk about it, and number two, paying me to talk about it.
Back to the show. D-Cole, I used to feel a little weird about recommending new developers learn Laravel because it's overwhelmingly like Node, you know? Like if you know JavaScript, if you're like a TypeScript, React, Express even, whatever, or Happy JS or whatever, if you know like Node and stuff, you have the best shot of getting a job of anyone in tech right now, right? Would
yes.
you say
I well
that's my
I would
my
say
soft
you...
like off the cuff feeling.
if you know, yeah, if you know JavaScript well, I would say like React, Node. Those are the two big things that you'll definitely get jobs in. And then the other one is like the all the big data stuff, which I don't understand.
Yeah, for sure. Yep.
Like TensorFlow and all that other stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you know that stuff, you're golden.
Agreed. Those are all the hot things. So it's like if somebody came to me, I used to be tempted to recommend those things. Like, well, but I'm here in Laravel because I'm too deep into it. I started with CodeIgniter. Like, this is where we are. I'm not, you know, it's like part of the crew, part of the ship.
You're the oldest, youngest man on the internet. Or the youngest, oldest man.
Youngest, oldest man. Yeah, right. So I just, you know, I tell my son, what's his name? Orlando Bloom plays Timothy Turner. I don't know his name. That's from Pirates of the Caribbean. What? Will
Orlando
Turner.
Bloom? Okay, Will Turner.
And Bootstrap Bill tells his son, he's like, I don't even know what he tells him, but
hey, Buffalo.
He doesn't want this life for him. So that's sort of me saying that to the other developer, but I've changed my position. Laravel is the bee's knees. It is totally the bee's knees. The community is phenomenal. The tech is phenomenal. It is actually like way ahead of other communities. And it's not like this lagging behind old community. It's this beautiful like community that's still on the up and up. Like it's not stagnant and it's not going down. It's only going up. I scroll around like GitHub's trending repositories and stuff from time to time just to like take a peek. Laravel's always in it. Like I don't see any other framework in it. Laravel is always in it.
It's popping off, dude.
It's popping off. Like Laravel is growing. The community is getting bigger. The ecosystem's getting better. The code is getting better. It's used more widely.
And it's sort of filling the role that Rails used to fill, which is that like every startup is building a Laravel app. Like not like
I don't feel that
not
way.
Like, not like mid-stage startups. I'm talking about every two guys in a basement startup.
Mm-hmm.
To me, like everyone I run into is building Laravel.
Interesting.
Like here in Asheville, like I ran into a guy at a Halloween party who was dressed as a lion, and he's building like a podcasting startup where like they're trying to make a microphone, but there's also some web software for podcast publishing. It's early stage. It seems like they're trying to do too many things. But anyway, the guy is making a Laravel app, and he's got a developer who he pays, and his whole website is a Laravel app. And I'm like, oh, cool. I do Laravel apps. Like, you know, and it's like, I just run into people in the real world, like at the airport. You know, if I'm writing code and the guy next to me on the plane is like, oh, what kind of code do you write? I'm like, Laravel? He's like, oh, me and my friend are starting a company and, you know, it's a Laravel app. It's like, it's just in the world. I run into it.
That's great. It's not my experience.
Not like, not on dev Twitter though.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm more,
you know? Dev
I'm
Twitter, it feels
surprised.
Like is React.
For sure. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm hearing about it more and more for sure. I mean, it's never been more, like anything but more and more for the time I've used it. So, but
I've noticed the transition of some famous JavaScript people. I mean, not just Wes Boss, but famous JavaScript people becoming more and more a part of our Laravel scene on Twitter. You know?
Yeah, like
where,
who?
Like, Wes Boss.
We have Justin
and
Jackson and Wes Boss. Those are the visitors.
But I feel like I've seen just more, like I've gotten more follows recently from people who are like JavaScript people who I've heard of, or JavaScript people who I've followed for a while. Or I've seen like more like JavaScript people when I'm going to follow someone, I'm seeing, oh, these people follow like Adam and Matt and Taylor. So it's like, oh, they're paying attention, you know? So I just get the sense more and more that like we're emerging from the shadows and starting to be seen in the public eye, which how could you not with all of the GitHub nonsense going on?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, it's...
I'm optimistic.
I'm definitely optimistic myself as well, I think.
Feel like Laravel might go to the big kids table soon.
I hope it does. And I think it has just as good of a shot, or a better shot than it ever has had, and it will only continue to be more. Yeah, I've seen the world now in a little bit more in terms of Twitter followers. Like, well, using Twitter followers as a metric for how big a community is and what the potential is like, you know? And like, I feel like I'm peaking. Like, I'm still growing, but I'm peaking in terms of Laravel followerhood, you know, like at 8,500 followers. It's not like, I don't know if there are 30,000 Laravel developers. Like, Adam has 40,000 followers now. And
but he had 15,000 before Tailwind.
Was it 15?
Yeah.
Really?
I think so.
That seems low, but maybe. Yeah. Yeah, but it was, exactly. So
it was at least like 12.
I can't. It's like maybe like 20 is the highest you can go in Laravel without either being the king or pulling from a different community. You know, like that's when you start to, like that's what Adam did. That's like Adam hit a ceiling.
CSS people.
He broke through the Laravel ceiling, making a CSS framework and making a Vue course. You know, those were the two things that like put him beyond that. But even, I bet if you look at I wonder how many followers Evan Yu has versus Taylor.
I'm guessing Evan has 40,000.
You think so? Yeah, I guess he's not like...
I'm guessing though. Look it up.
All right, Evan Yu is 90K. Yeah, I figured something close to 100 or over 100.
Whoa.
And Taylor, I'm guessing, is 60.
Like 57?
He's 77.
77.
So here's Taylor Otwell, who, you know, writes Laravel that's been a thing for a long, long time. And Evan Yu, who, you know, like Vue's only become like a really big thing in the past 5 years. 4 years. And he surpassed him, you know. So it's just the size of the pool is bigger in JavaScript in front end development in general. Is that it? It's bigger in front end because front end's not as segmented.
Well, I think every back end framework community uses React or Vue or Angular or something like that. Right? Like,
yeah,
you can be a Rails person and write React. You can be a Laravel person and write React. You can be a Phoenix person and write React. So you're, you know, while those three people probably follow three different sets of backend people, they all follow, you know, Dan Abramoff.
Right. Like, I follow Dan. Yeah, exactly. Right. Like, and any, even if you're a siloed front-end developer, it's still JavaScript.
Yeah.
So, like, you either had an Angular job and then you switched to React, or you know about it a lot.
And there's still lessons to be learned from other components. And I mean, that's, you could say the same thing for Rails, though, but you can't read Ruby as easily if you're a PHP. Or
right.
You can't read PHP if you're a Ruby developer.
You're not,
I mean, you could.
You're not tangoing. But it's not like to a Vue developer and a React developer, they see like Polymer, some like web component thing, and they're like, oh, really interesting, and I could use it in my React app. It's not like Laravel developers are like, oh, there's this new Rails thing that I can use, and, you know, no.
Yeah,
it's not happening.
And the Rails folks aren't excited about Livewire.
They're not.
Unfortunately.
And, like, C#, like, all that stuff? No way. .NET? What's up with that? That's another foreign... It's another continent.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there is just a limit to being, like, a hardcore backend guy. There's, like, a hard cap that I've sort of had to come to terms with, like, if we're talking like strategy wise,
when you say come to terms with it, you're saying you kind of had to embrace it.
Yeah, like for me, I have to, like, I do think about that from time to time. I'm like, okay, I'm putting my eggs in a basket that has a ceiling and a limited pool. And, you know, if I thought like strategy wise, and if my goal was like world domination, I should start focusing on basically on front end or stuff outside. Go the like teach front end stuff route, or convert to, I don't know, like some sort of JavaScript developer. But anyway, yeah, I remind myself that, well, one, I'm ultimately,
you're embrace the back end guy.
Yeah, I haven't really set myself up for success in that realm.
but if you came out and said I'm actually wrong,
I did on stage.
No, but it was a bit. You were doing a bit.
Well, they named the talk Embrace the Front End.
I saw and that. Did not, like, oh my god!
Watch the talk enough to know that it was a joke.
They didn't get the bit, which I think is great.
That's hilarious.
I think that's amazing.
I was already. I'm like, okay, this is like the seminal LiveWire talk. Like, so many people have been asking me about it. It comes out. It's called Embrace the Front End. No one will know anything that has anything to do with LiveWire. And still, when you share it on Twitter, Twitter like thinks it's Embrace the Front End. It's so dumb, even though the title's so changed.
Amazing.
That is funny. It is. Oh, so Nicole. So, how much do you want to make?
How much do I want?
Yeah. How much are you gonna make? Like,
how much am I gonna make?
Are you trying to make more money? Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. At some point, yeah. I think I could make a lot of money. I think there are some very basic things that I need to figure out first. I don't know if have we talked about the fact. So the ADHD is official. It's written down on paper. And now I'm like starting all of these like processes for treating it and stuff. That's one of those things where it's like, okay, I want to figure that out while someone else is my boss, you know, while I'm not having to worry about doing my work and generating sales and answering a million emails and, you know, like, yeah. I want to be focused on one thing while I'm figuring that out. But I feel like once I figure that out, I'm like relatively unencumbered, you know. Yeah. At that point, it's like, okay, now I feel confident that like if I did have to run my own business, I wouldn't cave under the weight of it.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
And at that point, I think I could, I mean, the amount I think I could make comfortably is, let's say 165.
Yeah.
I think 165 is a very achievable amount of money for someone sort of in the world who knows all the stuff that you and I know. And is not a total non-entity on Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, I think if you are going to go get clients, charge, you know, mid-high rates, or what you think of as mid-low rates, and I think of as mid-high rates.
You're just not on my level, man.
Then I, yeah, well, that's true. That is true. Then I think 165 is very doable. But then you have to pay for your own healthcare. So who knows? Who knows what it works out to?
Yeah. Yeah, boy.
What do you want to make? But that's not as, I mean, what I want to make is like 500 grand a year.
Gotcha.
You know? But I think what is likely is that I'll make between like 100 and 200 for the next decade.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm shooting for the stars, but I'm also like, you know, if I was really after just a really high salary, I would just freelance hard right now.
Yeah.
But
yeah, you could be making boatloads of money right now if you wanted to.
For sure. Yeah, but I, like we've talked about, I would rather do this life than make money. But I am I do have lots of moments, especially lately, where I'm like, oh man, to be rich again. To be the missing piece to all this is my wife makes like more than enough for both of us. So I could just deadbeat husband it and like not need to make money.
That'd be great.
But which is kind of interesting because when we got married, I was the quote unquote breadwinner. Not that we ever had
you won the bread.
Like I just made a lot more than her. And now the tables have turned. Because I just stopped making money, but
it's good for your relationship.
It is. Yeah. So the other missing piece for anybody listening who thinks that, I don't know, that what I'm doing is impossible. I saved up a boatload of money before I quit.
Yeah.
Like I had like 40,000 in a checking account and I have like 200 something in investments, like just from saving most of my money. So that's part of it. It's like, there's no real, you know, it's not like I was spending what I made, then I quit and just relied on my wife's salary. So anyway, but we are getting to that point where like the money, like my money's running out, not the investment stuff,
yeah.
But as far as like my just have like supporting us solely, like all of Hannah's money just went into investments and other stuff. Like it wasn't used for living. And now that it's becoming that, there's this, I don't buy much at all, sort of. I don't know. I'm in this place where basically what I'm trying to say is I often think like, oh man, if I just went back and got a job, I'd be rich again. Like I could just like spend money all the time and not think about it, you know? Like how nice would it be to have to actually consider dreams? Like I should buy a house. Oh, I should buy a car. Like we share a car, stuff like that. But I'm like, nope. Like we don't get to do any of that right now. Because I'm just enjoying my LiveWire donation to the world. So anyway, but I think I'm gonna give it until like in my head, I'm gonna give it until January, like a full year. And if I can't make like a decent living off LiveWire and independent stuff, then I'll like become a freelancer or something.
Hashtag contractor guy.
Yep. I'll be that contractor guy. Or whatever, maybe start an agency or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. Bring on the money. So yeah, here's a challenge. Challenge to the listeners. Tell everyone how much money you make on Twitter.
Yeah.
It's the right thing to do.
It is. It totally is.
I don't tell people how much money I make because I'm comfortable telling people how much money I make. Like I'm very uncomfortable with how much money I make. Especially like when friends who I know make less money ask me how much money I make, I get filled with guilt before I tell them how much money I make. But telling people how much money you make is the right thing to do.
Yep.
Everyone should know how much money everyone else makes.
Agreed. You taught me that lesson
everywhere
early on.
And the secret, keeping a secret of how much money you make is a selfish piggy move.
And it's like,
don't do it.
Reminiscent of this. Of like old culture, like money, like rude to talk about money type, like humility, weird stuff like that, that I grew up with. Like my dad never talked about money, never told me how much he made, no way. But the side effect of that is nobody knows how much anybody makes.
Right. And the reason that the sort of polite upper class people think it's rude to talk about how much money you make is because you make $60,000 a year and they make $600,000 a year and they think it would be very rude if everyone knew that.
Yeah. Rich signing bastards.
Good podcast. Good podcast.
Good podcast, brother D. Cole. I think we accomplished our goal of wanting to talk about something that didn't put us to sleep.
Yeah. No, I enjoyed it.
All right. Good stuff. Thanks for listening to the show. Cue the outro music now. Nothing? Oh, Nicole stopped recording. So we don't get his...